Hello, everyone. Welcome to Pep Talk, Pepperdine University's podcast dedicated to sparking conversations of personal and global significance, featuring world-renowned professors, faculty, and students from across the university. In this Pep Talk series, we will be discussing relationships. Whether you are single or married, a parent or a grandparent, a professional or an executive, relationships are an essential part of our lives. Join us as we explore how to build relationships and navigate their challenges in today's world. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Pep Talk podcast. Today, we're going to be diving into our relationship series. The first episode today is about dating, and on the podcast today, I am your host, Alexa, and with me is Kobe. And Kobe, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah. Hey, guys. I'm Kobe. I get the privilege of being on staff at Pepperdine and happy to help co-host with Alexa. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, it's super exciting to have you. Kobe and I have become fast friends, and it's great to have him chat on this topic. And we're both Pepperdine community members, and we're excited to welcome Kelly to the podcast too. Kelly Hare, the executive director for the Boone Center for the Family, and she also oversees the Relationship IQ program. Thank you, Kelly, for joining us.
Thanks, Alexa. It's good to be here with you and you too, Kobe. I'm really looking forward to the conversation on dating, as there's so much there to talk about.
For sure.
So much. I had the privilege of, when I was back in Pepperdine, when I attended Pepperdine from 2018 to 2022, and I got to attend some of the Relationship IQ classes, but I also got to attend fairly recently, and I just thought it would be great to have you on the podcast to talk about dating and datanomics and everything you do at the Boone Center. So thank you for hopping on.
Yes, thank you.
Awesome.
Yeah, so I was thinking about how we start this conversation, because dating, there's a whole lot of things that we could talk about. And especially, I think the idea here today is, right, Alexa and I are two young people who are navigating a complex world of dating, singleness, marriage. What do we do with all these things? And I think there's a landscape that's obviously changed. And so we're excited to get to talk to Kelly about how it's changed, what it looks like. I think an interesting, for me, actually, I think I have a pretty specific story from recently that I feel like kind of gives us a microcosm of what dating looks like in the modern world, which is that I actually help host some country two-step dancing nights at times. Which
they're very fun. You should all go.
So this is a little plug, I guess. Yeah, come out to one. But what's really interesting to me is that so we have this setting where we are intentionally teaching people how to dance. I'm teaching people how to two-step, how to line dance. And there's always this moment where it's like, okay, I've taught you the initial steps. Guys, it's time to go ask a girl to dance. And what's so interesting is, even in this setting where it's actually intentionally designed to be able to make people comfortable taking a step like that, and I'm literally on the microphone saying, hey, guys, don't be embarrassed. Go ask a girl to dance. There's a really low chance that she'll say no. If she says no, I'll give you $10 after the event. Even in that setting, guys are standing in the corner studying their shoelaces, right? And so this is a really interesting picture of, at least when I was growing up, when you watch pictures, when you watch movies and people are going to the sock hop, they're going to the dance. This isn't what Footloose says about what one of these events will look like. So I think that, for me, as an intro question, have things changed in dating? Did it used to be this way, or has something changed to where we're more uncomfortable? Dating looks different for us as young people than maybe it did when you were growing up or our parents or grandparents were growing up, Kelly.
Yes, dating today is very different. And it's fascinating, the example you give of, here are men and women in the structure of a dance. And often a structure really helps support people in the midst of a challenge and makes a difficulty easier to overcome. And even in the structure of a dance, of like, you have a reason, there's a structure in place of, this is what is supposed to happen. It's still challenging for a guy to ask a girl to dance. And I think there are so many reasons behind that. And I really empathize with young people today. For me, dating in my own story was very difficult. I got married 9 years ago, and the 10 years before that were very difficult in dating. But I think it's even harder today. And again, there's so many reasons behind why it's difficult to date. But when you look at data from, say, 100 years ago, let's just say 1930, and this is according to a Stanford study, where people met their significant other was embedded in their network of community from their family, their school, and school being high school, not even college, but school, high school, friends, neighbors, and church. That was roughly 80% of where people met their significant other. This is a rooted community. And so what it is to ask somebody out on a date, be set up by someone that is from a known group of people, is way less stressful or difficult than what it is today, where people are not being introduced by their family. They're not meeting people at school. They are still somewhat being introduced by friends, but not neighbors, not from the church, that people are connecting through online dating. That's where 61% of people are meeting their significant other. And so this is an experience often of kind of meeting someone out of thin air and not embedded in a network and a community that offers safety and a sense of being known and connected. And so this is a much more challenging experience.
And Kelly, Alex and I were talking about this earlier too. It's interesting that you talk about being introduced to someone who's a known member of your community. Because there's also on the flip side, you almost feel like you know everyone better, air quotes on that, because everyone has these sort of online personas, whether that's through a dating app or whether that's a personal brand on Instagram, other social media apps. And yet this doesn't seem to translate to us actually knowing these people better and being comfortable in dating in the same way that it would have been if your parents or friends in a local community would have been introduced.
What it is to read someone's dating profile can be so one-dimensional versus meeting someone or interacting with them in real life. Kind of the idea of pictures worth a thousand words. Well, an interaction with someone in a moment can communicate so much more in understanding who they are than reading something on a screen.
That's good.
I had a funny story. My parents met in a porta potty line.
Oh, wow.
At a country music festival.
That's one way to do it.
That's one way to do it, you know?
Yeah, whatever it takes.
They're happily married for 30 years. Got married at 21, 22.
I'm writing that down. It's like, have you seen those memes that are like, dating apps aren't working, so I'm going to go look lost in Home Depot. Dating apps aren't working, I'm going to go wait in a porta potty line.
It was funny because I went to the country music festival actually 2 years ago, and I went to every single porta potty line, like, looking.
Trying to repeat
history.
Didn't
find anybody, but it's a different world these days. Dating apps. I feel like that was... You know, I'm 24 right now. The first exposure, I've talked to my girlfriends about this when I was thinking about topics for this episode. The first real experience we had to dating was going on dating apps. I remember being, it's gross to say, but I remember being, you know, 17 or 18 on Tinder. Why was I on Tinder at 17 or 18? Like that was the culture that people my age are kind of thrown into. And I think there is a trend now to start meeting people in person, but nobody my age has really learned how to talk to people, date people in person, and it's very hard, you know.
I would wonder, Kelly, from your end, as you've seen things kind of change on the professional side and move towards to where, as you said, over 61% of people do meet online. Is this just a reality that we have to live with?
Yeah.
Is it a negative thing? Would you say that it's better to avoid dating apps and try and find other ways of dating people? Is there a way that people can navigate the dating app world better? In a way that leads to more intimate, positive, real community connection? Or how would you approach that if you were one of us at our age and navigating those things?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think because the reality is that almost 2/3 of people are meeting their significant other online on dating apps, it's best not to avoid them. But yes, they can be done better or worse. It is challenging and to recognize this is difficult to get to know people this way. I think in online dating, the temptation is to not take the people in front of you on the screen seriously and just think, oh, I can find someone else. I can find someone else. I can find someone else.
Mass optionality.
Versus slowing down and considering what actually is important to me. Mm-hmm. What are my values in looking for a spouse? And kind of slowing down and reading an online profile to think or imagine, could this person actually fit those values or what's important? And I think something that's often overlooked, you know, when people are looking at the surface or, oh, how much will I get along with this person? But I encourage people to ask the question and discern, can this person do relationship well? Mm-hmm. What is marriage at the end of the day? Marriage is a relationship. And so You want to be paired with somebody who can do relationship well. And yes, someone who shares your values and beliefs is really important, or equally yoked, as Christ has said. And I think equally yoked goes beyond just faith, but equally yoked in terms of who a person is as a person, their approach to life, their values. But again, can this person do relationship well? So slowing down and not discounting people just because they don't maybe meet a check off all your boxes to begin with, and getting input of your friends and people in your life on your own dating profile of how you can communicate who you are and what's important to you.
Have you seen this trend that people will take somebody's one friend in the group, take their dating profile and cast it up on the screen,
and everyone
will like swipe through match. This is a really funny thing. Me and my friends have done it. It's kind of uncomfortable. It's kind of funny. But I also think it's kind of a healthy practice in some ways.
You're saying that...
Does it reflect yourself on the screen?
So I would take my dating profile and what girls I'm either matching with or not matching with. And you guys are helping me make decisions and look through these profiles as opposed
and
to
say,
just
should
me.
I say...
It's a very authentic experience.
So it's
for
a way
sure.
of bringing wow. community back yeah. into dating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a way, yeah, I think that can be really supportive of not being alone
yeah.
in this process of having other people's eyes and ears open to who you're considering.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you're communicating who you are well.
Yeah. And I would ask too, Kelly, so we've talked about dating apps a bit. Are there any other particular challenges or changes when you look at the way that the dating landscape looks now? That make it more difficult or more interesting or harder to navigate than maybe it was 20, 30,
yeah.
40 years ago.
I think the term uses datanomics. Is that what the Boone Center uses when we talk about
that's
like this?
Looking at what we say that the economics of dating.
Okay.
As a numbers game, looking at your question first, Kobe, I think there is something else that's going on that makes dating really difficult today. And I think people are struggling in relationships in general. And I think part of this is coming out of the breakdown of the family that unfortunately over the years, there's more divorce is more and more common. And people have grown up seeing significant real pain and difficulty in their parents' marriages, their friends' parents' marriages. And often when there's more brokenness in the home, people can experience greater insecurity in themselves as a person and struggle with their own sense of identity and safety when their family is broken. And so when young adults who are struggling in their sense of identity and safety, and there's a lot we could say there, it's harder to have the courage to engage in romantic relationships if you're carrying your own sense of insecurity about who you are, your identity, sense of safety, when it comes to, okay, am I going to ask someone else and face rejection? If I'm feeling insecure or unsafe and not feeling equipped for relationships and knowing that relationships can go really poorly and bring a lot of pain.
Yeah. Because then that's a huge risk. You don't have something to fall back on.
Aware of the risk. And so I think what people have done, and it's understandable, even though it backfires, is to introduce and allow for a greater ambiguity in dating of saying, I don't want to use labels. I don't want to say we're dating. I don't want to be in a committed dating relationship. I want to leave things unspoken as a way to mitigate the risk. Like if I don't say that I'm dating, then if this doesn't work out, then maybe it's not going to hurt as much.
Yeah,
Just talking.
But what happens in this is asymmetric commitment. So you've got one person who might be more interested and they're tolerating the ambiguity and not asking for clarity because they don't want to be that person, but they're getting more and more emotionally invested and connected. And maybe the other person isn't quite there in terms of commitment. And so it actually, the ambiguity becomes a setup for greater pain and hurt when we're trying to avoid it by not calling it what it is. But the truth of the matter is we still get connected and attached, even if we don't use the labels of dating. When we're spending time together, getting to know a person, trust them, rely on them, we're connecting. And then if that doesn't go well, then we can experience more pain because there wasn't the clarity of the label of we're dating.
And I feel like the natural question to me then is, I think you've made a pretty clear diagnosis of some of the problems, right? We feel this sense of a lack of commitment, of a lack of a label that can even lead to further hurt. And so we're all just sort of like tiptoeing around, unwilling to enter into things. What do you think the solution is? I mean, I'm sure it's not like easy. It's probably not simple, but what does it look like to navigate that sort of a dating culture well?
Yes. I think it's having a framework for how to build a healthy dating relationship. And John Van Epp's relationship attachment model is amazing. He offers a simple yet very powerful framework for what it is to build a healthy dating relationship. And that is developing these five forces of attachment, getting to know a person, building trust, relying on them, commitment, and engaging in touch. Building those five forces in a relationship with someone in order incrementally. So what does this mean? Getting to know a person, say at a level two, and then building trust at a level one, and building trust, a belief that someone would do right by you based on your getting to know them. And as you build trust and that's going well, beginning to rely on a person, putting that trust into action. And then engaging in commitment. Again, you're building these forces incrementally in order. And the commitment force is really significant. And that's the one I think people are struggling to engage out of fear. But commitment is taking, relying into the future. It's making future plans to be with this person. And it involves clarity. And the clarity of commitment can be such a gift for people to know what's up and where you're at. So to do dating well, I think, is to have a healthy framework for how to build a relationship and being aware of your own pitfalls, the culture's pitfalls, and how you can, let's say if you struggle to build trust and you tend to withhold trust, how can you work on that and engage trust well as it's warranted based on getting to know a person?
I have another question. I think talking about ambiguity, alternatively, how do we remain intentionally friends with someone? Because I feel like part of this greater issue is relationships between men and women. You know, how do we stay clear in the friendship, or how do we decide if we want to take that relationship that you've built a foundation on into dating?
Yeah, because this is a big thing everywhere as well, right? Yeah. It's like, oh, are we just friends? Mm-hmm. Are we dating? There's this unclear, right?
And situationship.
And the situationship. Friends to lovers arc in the movies, right? How do you, can you navigate male and female friendships, relationships where you don't know, it's ambiguous? Mm-hmm. What does it look like to actually be friends well?
Yeah,
that is a great question. I think having intentionality around how much time you're spending with someone else and what you're sharing, kind of the connection or the intimacy you're building, being aware and mindful of that. If there hasn't been any communication around romantic interest or not, because it's easy for one person emotionally to be more engaged than the other person. And so kind of, I think when somebody has experienced an exclusive dating relationship, they know what it is to have someone be in that place in their life of this significant other, where they're their person and they go to them. Mm-hmm. And I think when that space is developed in someone's life, it's very easy to have somebody else fall into that space or role, whether or not there's been spoken clarity of romantic interest. And so being careful all to say not to give exclusive or extra relationship space to this other that you might have an interest in, or they might have an interest in you, without bringing some measure of clarity into that spot at some point. So to stay intentionally friends, I think, is to be mindful of healthy boundaries and not putting too much emotional, relational attachment onto one person, especially somebody of the opposite sex, unless, you know, there's conversation of romantic.
I mean, it seems
there.
To me like commitment, communication are going to go a long way either way, whether we're talking about dating, friendship.
Yes. And friendship. Even clarity of like, hey, we are friends. Great. So, and I would say,
the good old DTR, as they call it.
It's very easy for people to say, oh, we're just friends. And they're doing everything that somebody who's dating does and not call it that. Well, our hearts don't know the difference. Our hearts are connecting. So DTRs are important. And that, you know what, that is one way that dating has really changed today. There used to be the very simple conversation. Hey, do you want to go steady? Yes or no. But now it's like this DTR is, what would you guys even say the DTR is? I mean, it's this open-ended, amorphous conversation.
Yeah, well, the DTR only usually tends to happen like way after it should have happened.
Yes.
Right? It's very obvious that there's some sort of an ambiguity or a misunderstanding in this relationship. And so it's time to go find a bench on campus somewhere and have a 30-minute emotional conversation, right? As opposed to this very clear upfront, do you want to go steady?
Right.
The simple, do you want to go out?
The commitment is lagging behind the knowing and trusting and relying on a person.
Yeah.
Amazing. What are some, before we end the conversation, what are some places that you would recommend people to meet or to date?
Recommend that people have DTRs.
Where should we have our DTRs?
John Berger's, which is B-I-R-G-E-R's book, Date-onomics, has, I think, really practical, helpful suggestions. And his primary tip, which I endorse, is find a setting where you have some level of interest, some hobby that the opposite sex is more drawn to than typical. So for example, in my own story, cycling, road biking, more men show up for cycling groups. And all of a sudden, I was highly in the minority. And that was really helpful in my dating life. So for men, maybe swing dancing.
There we go.
More women you're going to find swing dancing. So find a hobby where you have an interest in it on some level, but the opposite sex is going to be more there.
I have a funny story. I do Venice Run Club. There's been a surge of run clubs throughout the nation in the past couple of years. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And every Wednesday I go with my guy friends or my girlfriends, and it's so much fun. But they have 600 to 1,000 people there every night. And people will come. People bring their friends, and they make you introduce yourself and say, are you single? Are you dating?
Oh.
What's your name? And then everybody meets for tacos and drinks afterwards. And if anybody's listening, if you haven't done a run club and you want to meet people and do something fun and casual, go to a run club.
I love that idea. Awesome. The structure of everybody. That's just what we do. We name kind of where things are at, if we're open or not, to jumpstart the process of, you don't have to kind of sleuth that out, that you already know if somebody is open or available.
Yeah. There's also some parties I've seen where people hold like a cup, like of a color. If like you hold a red cup if you're like taken, and a green cup if you're single.
It's like the handkerchief.
I've heard the stoplight party where beaded necklaces, red, green, or yellow.
The handkerchiefs at the Western dances, there's some if it's in the left pocket, you're single, and it's the right pocket, you're I don't know if that's correct. It's one or the other. So don't take that as gospel if you're going
to
dance.
But these types of strategies really do people a service and a favor of making what's very difficult today a tiny bit easier.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing today. Kelly, do you want to provide some basic info on what the Boot Center does with the Relationship IQ series before we end today?
Yes. Relationship IQ is one of the Boone Center for the Family's programs, and it helps young adults build healthy relationships, offers really significant and powerful relationship education skills. How do you date well? How do you practice good boundaries? How do you do relationship with families? How do you engage in healthy communication and conflict? But it's a curriculum to help young adults do healthy relationships.
Mm. Oh, amazing. We'll have to put the link in the bottom and make sure you check it out. Thank you so much for your time and wisdom today, Kelly. And thank you, Kobe, for joining me. The next episode is going to be on marriage. The question, is marriage
fitting
worth
step?
It?
Yep.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Thanks, everybody.
You.